All right, I'll begin. It's 20 seconds early, but I won't say anything important till 9 o'clock. Today is Monday, the 29th of May, 2023, and it's for America, it's Isru, the Isru Chag. For us already, the Chag is ancient history. Today is a very unique day. And it's Rechim Lahodot LaKadosh Baruch Hu, and most people don't realize why today is unique. But the Israeli army officially announced that the Eitan is now being delivered to the IDF. And the Eitan is a tremendous development. It's a troop carrier, and until now, troop carriers have not been able to defend against a direct hit from a missile. And the problem is, how do you make a troop carrier like a tank? And on the other hand, make it mobile like a troop carrier that can carry 12 soldiers and go 90 kilometers an hour over difficult terrain. And the Israeli army has worked on this. What are you saying?
I don't think it goes to 90 kilometers an hour over difficult terrain. It can, on the road, it goes 90 kilometers
Well,
an
it goes up to
hour.
90
But
and
it can also go
also go on difficult terrain. And they've worked on it for years. And I have a share in it. My grandson, who was cited as the Katzin Mitzrayim from the unit working on developing the Eitan. And my grandson told me that a few days ago, he said they're delivering the first, I think it's three, armored vehicles like this to the IDF, and they're ready to announce it and show it to the world. So if you go online today, you will see them literally being delivered and moving, and Ashrenu Shezachinu, and halavai we should reach the day when Kitatu Chavatam Tim. But until then, we need, in the Yisrat Hashem, and with some of our top minds, we can do it. Okay, so I just want to call attention, because for me personally, it's a bit of a simcha today. Jack sent me a recording of my speaking years ago, and I'm talking about the conflict between Torah and a Western democracy. And this conflict lives on because Torah sets limits and gives us a framework in which we have to live. And today, the Western world, the woke generation, you can do anything as long as I don't harm anyone. I can be bisexual, I can marry a man, a woman can marry a woman. I'm not harming anyone. And this is a tremendous conflict. And Chametz on Pesach, I don't have to tell you, buses on Shabbos. And can we find a happy solution? And I state, and I have to tell you that I just saw some articles in the Alonim. And Baruch Hashem, I'm in good terrain. I saw other Rabbanim, well-known Mechanchim, saying exactly what I say. We have to differentiate between the Rishut HaRab and the Rishut HaYachid. No one wants to mix into anyone's personal life. You're free to choose. This is what religion is based upon. This is the whole basis of Hilchot Teshuva of the Rambam. This is the whole basis of Torah, of Uvachat Uvachayim, freedom of choice. But on the public sphere, this has to be a Jewish state. Otherwise, we have no right to have this state. We only have it because we're the continuity of the Jewish people. And a Jewish state involves no public chilul Shabbos. Our affairs should be kosher. If I had my way, all kosher supervision should be paid for by the government. It shouldn't be private. It should be governmental. Private hands should not be involved. And we pay taxes, we get services. Among them, we deserve the right to have mashgichei kashrut. I can go on and on, but that to me appears to be the way we can alleviate, ameliorate, and bring about a Jewish state with democratic values. Rabbi Yeshua Grinstein sent me a quote from Barry Lichtenstein, and I have to say that I said a very similar in class. This has to do with the 1990s when the feminist movement was gathering strength and they only wanted a solution to the Aguna problem, the self-inflicted Aguna I'm talking about, where a man refuses to give a get. And there was the feeling, I quote, where there is a rabbinic will, there is a halachic way. And this is absolutely incorrect. We can have all the rabbinic will in the world, but Shabbat remains Shabbos, Kashrut remains Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, Chilchat Kitten, Neven Ezra. We can only work within the halachic contents. And Rabbi Lichtenstein spoke very negatively. He spoke about this verges on the blasphemies. And there was a whole incident at YU, the Torah Vamada conference, which I don't believe goes on today, but for many years under Rabbi Lam's tutelage, they would come together, the best minds in the Torah world or the YU Torah world, and discuss these modern problems. And there was one speaker, a lady who I happened to know from my first days in Israel. I actually corresponded with her father, who was the secretary of the chief rabbinate when I was in the rabbinate in America, and I had certain questions about kashrut here, questions I was getting, people visiting. I corresponded with her father. And then they were the first people to invite us for Kiddush when we moved to Rav Berlin from the absorption center, Merkaz Klita B'Katamon Tet, that family, the Itamar family, and his daughter, a very brilliant lady, a PhD, and she advocated this concept, if the rabbis want, they can find a solution. And I remember when Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein critiqued her, she broke into tears. Was Baruch Hashem is a good feminine trait, I would say. Well, it's many years ago. I knew her husband afterwards. We actually worked together in the encyclopedia during a certain time. I might have taught with him over the years, and he's no longer with us, unfortunately. I later taught her brother. I later taught her sister-in-law to be, and her father sat in my class in Michalá, and I didn't realize he was sitting in not to hear me or enjoy my lecture. He was sitting in to view the lady that his son was interested in. And Baruch Hashem, it's many years later, their grandparents many, many times over, so it all worked out. All right. Anyway, I also want to show you a very fascinating picture was sent to me by David Sukenik, Rabbi Sukenik, and here you can see it's a wedding of a Lakewood boy, and they're dancing about, Rabbi Aaron Cutler is dancing with the Chatan, and right in back, it's circled in red, there's Shlomo LeKalbach. So yes, this is from 1947. So you see that, like I've told you many times, Schleimler was one of the top students in Lakewood. By the late 40s, early 50s, he was a Shane Dover in Lakewood. Then he got involved with Chabad, and as they say, the rest is history. I also want to thank Yomo, sent me a kuntris, Tenu Kavod LeTorah, from Reb Shimon Fierst, in Megole Vin, from Vienna, Megole Vin, evidently he wound up in, where did he wind up, do you know? He wound up in America. There's a Rabbi Fierst in Chicago, Mark, am I right? He's one of the poskim. Fierst, it could very well be first in English. It's Feyud Reish in Hebrew, but it could be F-U-R in English. And this may be his family. But I'll tell you, he tries to accomplish the merger between a Litvish style of learning and a Hasidic style of learning. It's a very interesting quintus. He quotes many of the names of the 20th century, or at least the early part of the 20th century. Halacha l'maisha, can it really be accomplished in an ideal situation? The morning learning should be be'iyun. And later in the day, there should be a Seder for Bikiyot. That's the ideal. And can it be achieved? Then you get involved with the college problem. In other words, when I was in YU, this was not Shayach, because we learned till 3 o'clock, which is basically morning, and then we had college, and then we got home, and we had to prepare and do homework. It could be both Limudei Kodesh and both Limudei Chol. But to hold the third Seder was a little bit difficult. I would say in the Chesdi Yeshivat in Israel, they are attempting to meet this concept. More Iyun and also Bekiyat. There you can hold three Sedarim during the day. But in an ideal world, that would be the solution. Now, I have to be honest, when I decided to talk about Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, I did it because I felt, how can I start with Volozhin and all the world famous yeshiva? If here we have a make mitzvah, people really don't talk about Yachal. And Reb Meir Shapiro, it's a tragic figure, a man who could do so much and yet died so young, and what ultimately happened. And I have to tell you, the interest around the world in the Shurim and the Chachmei Lublin, wow. So, not my dear student, Rav Nachman Shmayahu Sazak, how does he pronounce it? Zions. Wrote to me a number of questions. So, first of all, in relation to the library, and this is quite interesting, I quoted to you about the library and it being destroyed by the Germans, and I'm quoting from the doctorate by Rabbi Dr. David Slavin. And when a person does a doctorate, they do their research. So here some books have shown up, even by someone listening to these shiurim, Baruch Amzel, my Talmud in Queens. So Baruch bought this book with the imprint, remember I showed you last week, from the Yachal Library. And he wrote to me, he checked out with Yad Vashem. You know, they have a list of over 4 million names out of the 6 million. The truth is, we have family members, we don't even know their names. There were people, my parents always said that there was correspondence from Europe, relatives, until 1939. Afterwards, they never heard again from their relatives. And obviously, they were killed by Hitler. We never made the effort to check out and their names and who they were. But Yad Vashem has collected over 4 million names. He checked with them, and the name of the person who owned the Sefer originally, what I showed you last week, is one of the 6 million. He's one of the names in Yad Vashem. So occasionally other books have surfaced. So Reb Nachman Shmayahu writes to me that this is a legend. I'll tell you, I'm not a great expert, but I would say very simply, I don't believe it's a legend. I believe if Slavin writes, the books were destroyed. But like anything else, you have 20,000 volumes. A few were taken out before. A few were on loan. When I came into Rabbi Revel's apartment in the Broadmoor Hotel in 1963, let's say, and I found books there from the public library that were taken out before Rabbi Revel died and never returned. You follow? So there are always going to be books. Let me use Yiddish. Was Valgerin. Again, Natan, I'm forgetting my English. How do you say was Valgerin? That Valger, I don't know. How do you say? They wander around. Okay? So it doesn't prove that Rabbi Slavin is wrong. It just, both events are true. Okay.
What, that the library once burned?
Yeah, the Nazis came in. If he says they burned, so they burned 18,000 out of the 20,000. 2,000 books were out. Some of them wind up in Hechel Shlomo. Some wind up in the National Library. Some wind up Yad Rav Chutna. But I believe Rabbi Slavin is correct, even though it's not total, like most things in life. Now, he makes another point that in regards to the dress of the Talmidim of the yeshiva, I would note some interesting things. The Talmud in the yeshiva were younger than the average Talmud in the Litvish yeshiva. So many did not have full beards yet. You follow in Yeshiva Tachmei Lublin, you could be accepted, I believe, from 14 years on, if you had 200 daf under your belt. In the Litvish yeshiva, you generally didn't reach them until you were 18, 19, even 20 plus. So he makes the point that you might see pictures of Chachmei Lublin yeshiva boys without a beard. It simply means they were too young to have a full beard. Payas were actually kept under the yarmulke. Why? Because there were gezeira in the 1850s in Russia that a Jew has to look like everyone else and be matan. So they hid their payas, they combed them up under the beard. So you may also see, he says, pictures of Hasidic people in Yachal, and their payas are under the yarmulke as they were raised. All right, this could very well be. Now, he also mentions to me there was someone very famous there, Reb Shmuel Engel. How come I haven't spoken about him? So I want to tell Reb Nachman Shmayahu what I've told many of my students over the last 53 years. The first word I learned when I came to Israel is Savlanut. And when you ask a question like that, you are suffering from the word that Rakefet coined, Savlanitis. We will get there. Now, he also sent me a very interesting article. They found the guestbook of Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. And they went through the guestbook and they looked who was signing the guestbook. And you'll see not only Jews, Goyim, non-Jewish clergy. This yeshiva, the publicity caught on. It's like a new type of university, like it's a revolutionary yeshiva. And your signatures, they went through the guest book and they identified. And you'll see from Jews, non-from Jews, parliamentarians, non-Jewish clergy, people were visiting the yeshiva. It was like Ma'aseh Bereshit, an attraction, something new. All right, that's very, very fascinating. And now, he also is telling me, you mentioned nothing came out of Yachal because of Hitler, and he's sending me a list of the Rabbanim Gedolei Hadar. He misunderstood me. Let me make myself clear. What I'm saying is, Yachal, we're going to talk about it. I don't know if we'll reach it this year or the start of next year. I knew some of their students. I'll tell you in a second, Chaim. Of course, great Rabbanim. I have a major study coming out in Chakira on rabbinic authority. I haven't signed off yet. I want to see that they make all the corrections, because I had endless corrections. And I thank Vic Chaim Snow made the connection to Chakira, although we know each other from many years ago. And the article sent us around of Princess Hirschsprung, so I know very well what came out of Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. But what I mean is something else. Mir Yeshiva. Everyone in the world is talking about Mir. Israel, Mir, New York. All right, New York, it didn't succeed to the extent it succeeded here. Tells Yeshiva. Wow, when I was growing up, Tells. Anyone who wanted to send this kid to a top yeshiva away from New York, they sent you to Tells. Some of my best friends later in college, Dr. Goldstein, my classmate, the Rebbe's doctor, I have his, I write about him in the Rav, in my work on Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. He went to high school in Tells. aren't bad. Zeichet Tzadik Levrachi. I have no idea who these people are. Before they came to YU, they all went to Tels. Now, Natan finds it hard because he grew up in Muncie, or part of his life in Muncie, where it was Woodmere first, Woodmere to Muncie. Wow, you move around like a rabbi. He grew up in Muncie. In Muncie, you mentioned Tels. Call Mark Wiener, find out about Tells in Chicago or Riverdale. You follow me, Tells in Cleveland? Aye. Rod Keffert can tell you stories when he visited there 20 years ago, let's say. Wow. But Tells, you see, everything else remained the name, but Lakewood, no. Where did you learn, Chaim? You learned in Lakewood? No, you didn't learn in Lakewood. You learned in Slutsk. No? So Chaim says to me, I learned in Slutsk. You didn't learn in Slutsk. You learned in Kletsk. Kletsk became Lakewood. Show me one Jew in the world who doesn't talk about Lakewood. You follow? What I meant with Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, yes, there's a yeshiva in Bnei Brak. There's in technically in Detroit, the day school began, Yachal. But it doesn't have the luster, the fame. People don't really identify it as the continuity of Lublin. That's all I meant. And that's why it's a mates mitzvah. And I can give you another example. I spent so many lectures on the Hildesheimer Rabbinic Seminary. See, nothing remains of that today. They desperately tried to move Hildesheimer to Tel Aviv. And you all know Reb Chaim Moser wrote a tshuva against it, wrote to the Chazon Ish. It's all been published. And as Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg said, once Reb Chaim Moser opposed it, there's no way they could move. As liberal as he was, he couldn't go against Reb Chaim Moser. And nothing remains of Hildesheim. All that remains is the library, part of their library did get to Tel Aviv. And that formed the basis for the Rambam Library in Tel Aviv. Today, I don't think that library exists. Tel Aviv is a different... No one can believe me when I talk about Tel Aviv that it was a Shomer Shabbos city. What are you talking about? Dizengoff was a Shomer Shabbos, went to shul every Shabbos, was totally opposed to Chil Shabbos Barabin, and Bialik, Achara Am, I mean, the most famous names out of Tel Aviv were Shomer Shabbos. Today what happened, all right, I hope it'll be rebuilt. There's a lot going on today with outreach in Tel Aviv, Rosh Yehudi, they did, if you remember, Simchas Torah and Dizengoff Square and probably the biggest minyan in Israel, Yom Kippur, they put a mechitzah up in Dizengoff, and thousands of men and thousands of women. My Talmud, Ariel Constantine, his shul, the international shul, whatever they call it, Rehov right off, Rehov Gordon, I was there over Shabbos, Friday night. I mean, he knows, at Kenda Malacha, he knows how to do it. He has a white rug. You enter the shul from the street, you walk on like Kabbalat Shabbat, white, beauty. He gets hundreds of people, has a whole Kiddush Friday night, a Kiddush Shabbos morning. So there's a lot going on. But that library, I'll tell you why I saw it last. Malon Devorah. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Malon Devorah, Rehov Gordon. Malon Devorah was built by a frum Jew in the early 60s, mid-60s. I remember staying there when I visited Israel, the only time I ever visited before I settled, 1968, with RCA. Thanks to Mr. Gris, my salary doubled. I read about it in Washington. The Hashgacha Pratit in my life is tangible. That's all I can say. Imagine if someone would have told me, you missed it, when I got off the boat, that there would come a great day, May 29th, 2023, when you're going to celebrate the first armed troop carrier that can survive a missile and your grandson helps develop it. Follow me, Ashwini says, Achinu, we take these things for granted. All right. So in Malon Devora, there was a kollel that was sponsored by the hotel. I don't know what's going on at this minute. It was there until a few years ago, that much I can tell you. And they showed me the library, and they said, that's from the Rambam library. And I saw thousands and thousands of svarim. And if you open them up, some of them, Taka said, they're from the original Hildesheimer library. Okay, so that's exactly what I meant. Let me see if we had any more questions. So he also writes to me, why did the Litvisha oppose on monetary grounds? Look, you can do a doctorate on a PhD thesis on monetary lawsuits in the last 200 years between Torah institutions. And this is the whole question of Hasagat Gevul. And here what they were worried about, you say, first of all, the Litvish yeshivas were in Litva. Chachmei Lublin was in Poland. But none of these yeshivas were able to raise enough money in their own locality. And Reb Meir Shapiro became a real threat. Where did he travel? England. All over America, Canada, and this was the Litvishi Yeshiva. Where were they going? They all had offices in America, and it was a threat. My own feeling is kinat sof from Tarbe Chachma. When Landa College opened, I heard people in YU. I was living in Israel, but I was tuned into YU, obviously. And I heard people maledicting Lander College and what Bernie Lander is doing to us. And all I could say was, Kinat Sof from Taber Chachma. What's wrong? What's wrong? And if anything, it's like we said, I quoted the Rav, Mizrahi looks over at their shoulder at Aguda, Aguda looks over their shoulder at the Eder Haredit. And why are you good? They have competition. Excuse me? No, Toro began was not real competition for YU because it wasn't really a yeshiva. Toro begins as a college. It's a little bit different. Toro in Flatbush, for instance, has many yeshiva boys, but they don't. That's not the yeshiva. They're just there for secular studies.
Well, when Toro started, it was...
Could be. When Toro, yeah, I remember they were a little... But Toro, the way it developed, it was certainly not competition. But Landa College pulling out rabbis Braunspiegel and Parnas, and afterwards Rabbi Sachs, and anyone else they pulled out, I don't know. But I'm when I walk in, whenever I would walk into Landa, my own student is the vice president, Rabbi Krupka, and someone listening, it's his mother's first cousin, married to his first cousin, who's the president today. And I'm very much at home there. But to say it's competition, Baruch Hashem, Tienat Sofim Tabe Chachma, and, you know, Torah Jews, unfortunately in America, either you're marrying, assimilating, not marrying at all, or you're becoming, they say, Satan will be the majority of the Jews in America in 50 years. All right, I don't know if it's true or not, but... we have plenty of room for more yeshiva. But there was this feeling, which you can understand, that he's cutting in how many people, and remember the Depression came right away, and how many people can give money. And remember I spoke with you last week about that woman in Philadelphia, and who sat in that chair? Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva from Litta, and Reb Meir Shapiro from Yeshiva, Chachmei Lublin. Now, I received many pictures of the family. Here's the article I just spoke about a minute ago. A different type of seminary. Pre-cyclists and other tourists visit the Lublin Yeshiva. And it's amazing. They have photographs of the Here, take a look. Let me put it right here. Photographs of where you write, you're the tourist, with the words, what you feel. Unbelievable. And the yeshiva attracted it. It became a sight. It, one of a kind. Nowhere else in the world did you have a yeshiva like Chachmei Lublin. Here's a picture from the cornerstone laying. The third person in is Rav Meir Shapiro. You see, here's Rav Meir Shapiro holding a brick in his hand. I don't believe you'll find the picture of Baruch Bialevich holding a brick in his hand. But the Rav Meir Shapiro, he was a kunstmacher, as I told you. My best comparison is to Rabbi Rishkin. Rabbi Rishkin, he knew how to perform. He was an actor. He could get up. I'll never forget the wedding of his daughter, where he takes his son-in-law and he says they knew they were for each other because they both loved the song Asukala Aklena. The wind is blowing it. And he tells his son-in-law, come, let us sing it. And boy, I was sitting there, I said, I could never, ever equal Steve Rishkin in a public performance. Wow. All right. So I think you get, by the way, with Steve Rishkin, he accomplished many great things. Why he became so left, it's hard for me to comprehend. That's a different story, and I have to tell you honestly, I totally differ with the rabbi I'm reading again. I read some material over the Chag. I keep attuned to what's going on in Israel. And they're boasting how there's a Kehillah in Efrat where they have only one rabbi, Rebbetzin Mervis, and she's the rabbi. And it's true, they publicized, and as you recall, that hurt me very much. That's one part of it. The other part, which hurts me as much or even more, is how can you be in favor of giving the Reform and Conservative a separate area at the Kotel, where you'll put up a big sign, Orthodox here, Conservative here, Reform here. It's total assimilation. All they want is recognition. What does Reform have to do with the Kotel? They abolished Shivat Zion. They abolished Jerusalem. You don't know what went on at the Columbus platform 140 years ago? I mean, what are we talking about? So thank God they came back to some Zionist identity. But chas v'chalila, give them recognition. Look what we have in New York today. Look what we have all over America. Look the conservative movement. Look how far they have gone. Literally, there's no difference between them and Reform Judaism. Even their attitude towards intermarriage, shifting gears. It's frightening. What remains? Remember, I had good friends who taught at the seminary. I can tell you, Professor Dov Zlatnik was a Yiddish tzaddik, plain and simple. The Lubavitcher Rebbe told him, don't you dare leave the seminary. He gave a lecture there in the 60s. I told you about it on Tarek Mishpacha. The Rebbe sent for him and gave him a big yashar koyach. And he was a tzaddik. There were others there too. I had a cousin by marriage, Mandelbaum, taught there. It was a Shema Mitzvah 100%. There were others. I had students, the Preschel family. I hope you recognize the name. Rabbi Dr. Tuvia Preschel, he taught there. There was a whole presence of people that today would be ripping Kriya seeing what happened. I remember how much Dov Zlatnik suffered when he left, when they started ordaining women. And that was the turning point. Okay, now, let's come back here. We still have a long way to go with Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. My goal is to continue to make it come alive after Reb Meir Shapiro, up to the Holocaust, and even show you some memoir literature that Rabbi Slavin couldn't quote. It wasn't available when he was writing his doctorate. People I knew from the United States who were Talmidim. Also, let me mention, I received a voice message from my dear student Rabbi Mark Dratch. I trust you recognize the name, the first vice, the executive vice president, or first vice president, I don't know what the title is, of the Rabbinical Council of America, Rabbi Bezivik Rishon, Rabbi Lamb's son-in-law, and my dear student Mark Yeretzadik. Not an easy life. His Sarah, who I knew very well, Rabbi Lamb's daughter. By the way, the Lambs deserve all the credit in the world. These were public figures who raised wonderful children. You follow? And underline what I just said. Wonderful, wonderful children. And Rabbi Lamb's family, so Mark was telling me stories. I said some of them I already spoke about in class. Rabbi Lev, part of the Rabbi Slavin's doctorate is based upon interviews with the Bamels. That was Rabbi Lamb's mother was a Bamel. So her brother, Yosef Bamel, and there was another brother, I believe, Shimon Bamel, they were Talmidim from the earliest point with Reb Meir Shapiro. So Mark was telling me that he says to his wife's uncle, Rabbi Yosef Bamel of Crown Heights Yeshiva, is it true that you had to know 200 Daf Gemara by heart? And his uncle says to him, what's the shail? Everyone knew 200 Daf Gemara those days in Poland. And he said it with a very cute smile on his face. But what he did tell him was that when they heard Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung was coming to the yeshiva, they were a little bit worried because here these guys were hotshots. And Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung already had a reputation that no one can equal his memory. And they were worried he's going to come and show off. And they went to meet him. And they prepared 10 questions in Shas, Bekiyot, Rashi, Tosfot, etc. 10 questions for him. 9 of them he answered correctly. On one Tosfos they caught him. And Mark says his uncle told them which Tosfos, but he doesn't remember. It would be interesting to know which Tosfos, but he says then, when Pinchas Hirschsprung was already in the yeshiva, they got together and they made a pledge that they would never use their learning to show off, only l'shem shemayim. And they all got along beautifully. Now, when you come to Yeshivat Chachma Lublin, and this is a problem not just there, see, you're now getting involved in a basic question that has haunted us for the last 200 years. Tell me, you learned in Lakewood. I learned in Lakewood. I had many acquaintances from that era. I just saw a picture in the book on Meshulam David Soloveitchik of Yankel Schiff. I could never recognize him. I remember Yankel Schiff, clean shaven. I remember his big forehead. To see his face in front of me today, there he is with a beard, with payas. He looks like everyone else. And tell me, you're learning in Lakewood. Is there a curriculum? Do you get a degree? Do you get smicha? You come to YU, you know, all right, I entered YU 51, 55, graduated high school. 59, graduated college. Okay. I'm supposed to say summa cum laude, graduated college. Number one in a class of 84. Big deal. 61, smicha, MA, MHL. 66, a doctorate. Everything organized. What does this remind you of, Vic? Did you study in Hildesheimer 100 years ago? Okay, absolutely. Studied in Hildesheimer? It's a seminary. You enter. how many years of study, how many classes. And then when you get your doctorate in a neighboring university, we'll give you ordination. Is this what a yeshiva is supposed to be? Rabbi Lam wrote his doctorate. What is it entitled? He wrote on the Voloshin of Family. The Chaim. Torah Lishma. You go to learn, you learn Lishma. Tell me, in Lakewood, was there ever a smicha? Someone studying for smicha? Go back, forget about Lakewood in my time. Go back to Mir. Go back to Slabatka. Go back to Tells in America. Go back to Lakewood in America. You want smicha? It was like, what are you giving up Torah Lishma? All right, if you had to make a living and you were getting married and your father-in-law was a Rav and he wanted you to help him in his position and ultimately take it over, you went to a Rav. There was Rabbanim, Rabbi Levitan, other Rabbanim. You went and you passed an exam and you're a daya and you got smicha. You follow? But it never entered the yeshiva. And Reb Meir Shapiro, when he was challenged, what's going to be with these individuals? It's no formal course. You went there, you come, you learn. Remain 2 years, 4 years, 8 years, 10 years. I remember there were a few individuals in Lakewood that yet studied with Reb Aaron and Kletsk. And that like continuing. There was no limit, no beginning, and no end. And these were big lamdan. I mean, I'm not talking now. There were other problems in Lakewood, which would be worth researching and turning into a documentary. What Hitler did to us, there were some students who never recovered from the Holocaust. And this Reb Aaron, it was chesed. He kept them, supported them. They were broken. I remember there was one student, breaks the heart. I share it with you. He was Yerach Kletzka, and he went through the hell. And Friday night, he would never be in yeshiva. There were two kosher hotels on Lakewood, a big one and a small one. And he would always come back claiming he was at one of the hotels, which he probably was. And, you know, people, Rachmanim b'nei Rachmanim, they would feed him. And he would come back and tell stories of who he met and conversations, and some of it sounded unreal. So I was a curious kid. I said, you know, Vasimitim, what's going on with him? So I remember I got two answers, one that I understood at the time, one that I didn't, and only later in life did I comprehend. The first answer was the Holocaust, that he never recovered mentally. I don't know what happened, how long he remained in Lakewood, what finally happened, Rachmanis. The other answer was he studied too much Musa, and he took it seriously. The second answer, as a kid, I didn't understand. You've heard my lectures on it. That's for the Chil Yaakov Weinberg, the Sri Deish, why there was opposition to Musa, looking to Pumas HaMusa, which the right-wing world doesn't allow to be republished. I got to tell you, it's a tremendous, terrific volume. But how do you hide facts? I don't know. It troubles me so. I'm a Talmud of the Rebbe, and as I told you so many times, I think if someone said to the Rebbe, I ate Chazar on Yom Kippur, or if he said to the Rav, Rebbe, I'm intellectually dishonest, I think the latter would upset the Rav more. Chazar on Yom Kippur, you can do tshuva. But when you're intellectually dishonest, it's a fadobnkeit. It's a mishap in your whole personality. You follow me, Chaim? So I couldn't understand it then. But what? So people were giving heavy money to Meir Shapiro, and this is all recorded sources. They said to him, how many Rabbanim are you going to raise? He says, I'm not here to raise Rabbanim. I'm here to raise Talmidei Chachamim. Okay, you hear the race from the come. 200 students, 300 students. Where are you going to find rabbinic positions for them? What else can they do? Talmid Chachamim, Rabbanim, Dayanim, Sheikhtim. So he answered, no, I'm here to raise learned Jews. Two will be rabbis, and quoting Rabbi Shapiro now, and 298 will be mevinim on the two rabbis. And I have to tell you, Mr. Mendelovich gave a similar answer in America. When Torah Vadas, you see, YU, what happened in YU, it never became a seminary. But the pressures, YU began, it traces its origins 1886. What do you mean 1886? And by the way, you're all familiar, I trust, Rabbi Gil Klapman's doctorate, Rabbi Dr. Gilbert Klapman, who wrote his doctorate on the early years of the yeshiva, 1886 to 1915, until a guy named Rothkopf came along and took it from 1915 to 1940. And unfortunately, no one has stood on Rothkopf's shoulders and gone further, which is a very sad story, because there's a concept of Hakarat HaTov. And we owe a big Hakarat HaTov to Rav Shmuel Belkin for what happened after 1940. But leave that out now. So the yeshiva, what happened was that the elementary school began in 1887. I remember I gave lectures on this to maybe to 15, 20 years ago. It was called Eitz Chaim. Then the kids graduate Eitz Chaim and they go to Seward Park High School. They go to a regular high school. So there were a few parents, particularly the crowd around RJJ, they were Rabbanim, Sheikhtim, they wanted their kids to continue learning. So one of the parents started teaching his son at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. No, he knew his son would say, I don't want to learn, all my friends are playing stickball outside. Come with your friends. So he had a group around him in his house. And then there were too many kids. They had to go into the shul. They went Mariupol shul, the east side, had room there. And that's how the yeshiva began. But it was very haphazard and desolatory. No organization whatsoever. So when people were coming in from Europe and they wanted to have degrees, they wanted to Americanize, this is where Rabbi Revel is brought in to head the yeshiva, and he organizes a high school. But he didn't only organize a high school. High school begins January 1916. He also reorganized the learning. And in 1919, YU, what is YU today, gave smicha for the first time. You follow? And this was an achievement, an organization. Now, it never became a seminary, but it became utilitarian. That's the word I'll use. America influenced it. It became utilitarian. And then you have a college. No, you have a college. You want to go beyond. You want to get smicha. You want to have a profession. And it fell into this pattern. Teira Vadas did not go along with it for quite a while. And they would ask Mr. Mendelovich, what kind of student, what are you trying to do? He says, I want to raise from Balabatim. There'll be a few Rabbanim, and these people will be the Mevinim. It's exactly what Meir Shapiro's answer. Why you, to a certain degree, became like that. Meaning, I know from my time, so many people got smicha. The majority, I don't think they went into the rabbinate. Some went in, they went out afterwards. I'll take a case example, Irwin Shapiro. Irwin Shapiro was a few years ahead of me. He was chavruta with Fisher, with Yossi Fisher, who lo aleinu just lost a son. I now recognize who the Fisher was. I didn't know that at first. From Atlanta, Georgia. And they got smicha. Irwin even was a rabbi for a short while. There's a recording where he's speaking in his shul. He's making his mother very happy. His mother was a tzaddikin. They went into business. Irwin went in, his father, plumbing supply. They were the biggest plumbing supplier on the East Coast. They had a whole building in Williamsburg, a building from the Civil War. I yet knew the building. Afterwards, SACMA bought it, and that whole area, they took it right near the Navy Yard, the whole area. SACMA, Yad Hazaka. Fisher went to Muncie, and wound up in the, I believe it was on the stock market, an investor. But they had smicha. That they remained from Jews, 100%. That they held by learning, 100%. But you see, YU certainly had that element. Mark comes into YU, he begins the Jewish studies program. Ultimately, his goal is smicha, the rabbinate, the chaplaincy. And this was Reb Meir Shapiro's answer. Here he has a footnote. How are we able to find 500 communities for your students to serve at rabbis? He answered, who says I will make them all rabbis? Only two will be crowned as rabbis, and the 498 remaining will be mevinim. And I have to tell you, David, this today is part of the whole machlokes in New York. Everyone is enjoying what's going on in Park Hill Synagogue. I've heard people giving interpretations in Pilpulim. All right, it's not so easy. Rabbi Schneier is a hard... By the way, the original name of the family is Schneerson. You follow that, Chaim? They're related to the Rebbe. Rabbi Mark Schneier is... Believe me, it's Mark. What's his? Do I have the father, Rabbi Mark, or am I talking about the son? Help me out here. What?
Mark is the son.
Mark is the son. The father is, what's his first name? What?
Arthur.
Correct. Rabbi Arthur Schneier, a very hard act to replace. So they wound up with an associate rabbi or an assistant rabbi who had no college degree. He's the son of Rabbi Goldschmidt of Moscow. I have a deep involvement with this family. Rabbi Goldschmidt of Moscow, originally from Switzerland, then he studied near Israel, then he had the misfortune to be at the home of someone named Rakefet when he was a teenager, who inspired him to do things for Russian Jewry. Me and my wife and myself played a big role. And he becomes chief rabbi of Moscow. And he marries a girl, a Stern College graduate from Muncie. So their son is raised already with English, with Russian, with Hebrew. And he studies in Lakewood, he studies in Panovich. And the Balabatim split. Some of the Balabatim, you understand, they want a rabbi. Who ever heard of a rabbi without a bachelor's degree? Bad enough he doesn't have a doctorate. And other Balabatim say, we're mevinim. You follow me? Underline the word mevin. Take it from Reb Meir Shapiro. He's a Talmud Chacham. He has seichel. He knows how to conduct a proper rabbinate. This is part of the machlokes. So you see, the American rabbinate, there has been to a certain degree a great shift in what a shul is all about. When I went into the rabbinate, I remember my first position I stood for, which I didn't get, thank God, was Guelph, Ontario. So I still remember the drasher I gave him, Pashat Chukat. And I remember the Balabatim said to me, in all the years that the shul exists, we have never had a sermon as good as you gave. I had other problems. I can barely lay in. Who could lay in? I have no voice. They needed someone, you know, more of a kolbo. So I didn't get the position. But what else? Who there could learn? Who there ever opened up a Shulchan Aruch? Whoever made a siyum in Shas? Today you have Balabatim. Rabbi, we don't need the preaching and the stories and the New York Times. Give us Torah. Give us Basaviyayin. You follow? It's a different rabbinate today to a certain degree. And this is Reb Meir Shapiro. I love it. 498 rabbi, Balabatim, mevinim, and two rabbis. Now, As far as secular studies go, and here Rabbi Rubin asked me this question weeks ago, there were no secular studies in Chachmei Lublin. As a matter of fact, in all the Europäische Yeshivat, there were no secular studies. The only exception to this was Telz. Telz, which is, I remember my Rebbe, Rav Shmuel Lazer Volk, who was my Rebbe for 2 years before the Rav, and he was at Telza. He'd get hysterical at Telz in Cleveland. He heard that they require it to get smicha, your wife has to wear a shetel, and you can't go to college. Oh my gosh, he was a Kohen, he had a temper. The Gemara says, Conover. So he had a temper, I can still remember. We asked, you know, we were kids, we liked to dig the Rebbeim a little. Rebbe, nu was man trachten, gehet was es entels, the neue Gezeiras, the new, how do you say it in English, the new decrees? Well, das ist Telz, das ist nicht Telz, Amerikaner Nordischkeit. Och, was he furious. Who heard of a shekel in Europe in the Litvische Welt? And who heard not going, not having high school and in America not to go to college? Oh my. So you see, in Europe, what the yeshivot were afraid of, and we'll talk about this when we deal with the Lushan. The 1800s already saw so many yeshiva boys, good minds, they kent good learning, they knew how to learn very well. But they went off the path. They went to gymnasium, they read books afterwards, chemistry, mathematics. Some remained from, they were Mizrachiites, those that remained from basically. This was Rabbi Reines and the Malady. There are many names, will come to them. But many of them left the path. And the attitude in Chachmei Lublin was much more open than the yeshivat in Europe before World War One. Before World War One, if they caught you reading a secular book, an academic volume, they would asked you to leave the yeshiva, plain and simple. Bialik is an example of someone who came to Volozhin and thought it would be more open-minded and doesn't stay very long and leaves mutual consent. After World War One, the threat was not as great, meaning the world had changed so much with Chilul Shabbos and Achilat Nevelat and Treifat. You just read that Woody Allen saved another Jew who had been borough president of Manhattan, I believe, Stein. He was choking on pork that he was eating. They're sitting in a restaurant, and they're going to be joined by Alan Dershowitz shortly afterwards, a BTA graduate from Borough Park. A treif restaurant, and he's eating pork, and he did the hemlock maneuver on him. You all read it, it was headline news. You see, after World War One, you could clearly see what happens to people who read and become broad and think they're modern, the new generation. It sounds very familiar. 100 years later, we have the same illness. But in the yeshiva world, there were individuals who quietly became giants of knowledge. No, give me an example. Reb Chaim Zimmerman. Reb Chaim Zimmerman, that's my kid brother in Las Vegas. His wife is the daughter of Reb Dov Sherman, who was a Rebbe in RJJ from time immemorial. Reb Dov Sherman was Chaim Zimmerman's chavruta when he came to America. Why? Why did he come? What saved his life? Because his uncle, the Baruch Be'er, Yomo, the screen has disappeared. Connecting. Why does this happen? I'm back.
Recording in progress.
Why does that happen? You don't know. Okay. I'll pick up. You heard Reb Chaim Zimmerman's name? Yitzchak Sheikh, if you heard the name from me. Reb Chaim Zimmerman. No. What are you doing? Okay, 1 second. I can begin? Okay, I just want to pick up where I got cut off. So when Reb Chaim Zimmerman came to America, my kid brother's father-in-law was his chavrut. Reb Zimmerman was a gadol. Why? Reb Baruch Be'er saved his life. Why? Reb Baruch Be'er told him, get out of Europe. You'll destroy all the yeshiva. Reb Chaim Zimmerman knew all of biology, all of mathematics. He can't hear? What's happening? Oh, God.
Okay.
Can you hear now? Okay. So, Reb Chaim Zimmerman, I'll pick up. I hope I'm getting it all. So, Reb Chaim Zimmerman, Reb Baruch Be'er Leibowitz kicked him out of Europe, said, get to America, because you've picked up so much knowledge from his reading. But he didn't call him an apikaris, you understand? They already went broader. And he kicked him out, that saved his life. If Reb Chaim Zimmerman always said, if not for my uncle kicking me out of Europe, because I would destroy all the yeshiva, all the bright guys would start learning math and science, saved his life. In Chachmei Lublin, they were not opposed if you studied on your own, if you fulfilled all the requirements of the yeshiva, and you studied on your own, as long as the books were not epikursis, there was no burning of books. It wasn't like before World War I, if they found a book that they suspected was not a Torah, you could have a problem. Here, fine, there was an openness. In addition, the whole yeshiva took on, I would use the word, a contemporary stance. It wasn't like you're disappearing in time and going to yeshiva that is timeless and you're back 100 years, 1,000 years. It's like people make fun of the Haredim today. You're primitive. You haven't modernized. Here, because of Reb Meir Shapiro's personality, member of the Sem, Polish Parliament, leader of Agudat Yisrael, international affairs, Jewish affairs, involved, a good speaker, public orator, Polish as well as Yiddish, there was a broader environment in that respect. And the proof of the pudding is that those Talmidim who survived the Holocaust, they all became very prominent Rabbanim, Rashi Yeshiva. They had a certain contemporary broadness that you didn't necessarily get in Litvishi Yeshiva or in a Hasidic court if you studied in Ashtibel. More than that, the environment, and this we see from the memoir literature and the people that he interviewed, and I knew, as you'll see later, if not this year, next Zman Bezrat Hashem, I knew some of the people, some of the Talmidim. There was a certain seriousness in the yeshiva. Now, what do I mean by seriousness? And here I can tell you, I'll be the di havi uvda, my own experience, and I can understand very well what they mean by seriousness. When I learned in Lakewood, the original Lakewood I'm talking about, Schlutz, Kletz, Lakewood, it was terrific. There was no pressure. You had a feeling, you come, you learn, you steig. You had no worries, no problems, basically no goals. No concept of graduating, finishing. It was beautiful. I remember on Friday, I think we only had a Seder in the morning, if I recall, and then you ate a little lunch, you went to the park, you went for a walk. There was a little Lakewood then, there was a lake, as I recall, Lakewood, and you were relaxed, you were relaxed. I came to YU. I don't recall 1 minute in Yeshiva College where I was relaxed. College, university. And I already knew I wanted to be a rabbi. I wanted to change the world. I wanted to make every Jew in America Shomer Shabbos. No, I have to admit it. I admit my sins today. I never dreamt. All that would concern me is Lechadesh Torah. Wait till you hear my shiur next Sunday, and you'll see me dancing a kazatska, understanding something I never understood decades ago. But all right, you want to, never a dull moment. The Rav came in Tuesday, my time, he came in actually Monday evening. He drove in the Rebbetzin Monday afternoon, the Dodge, I still remember the car parked on Amsterdam Avenue. Tuesday was sheer. And Tuesday night, my father would tell my Talmidim, later my father would meet the BMT boys in Rehov Shachal, and he'd say, "Your Rebbe, that's my son." My father was a postman. He'd have to be at work, I think, 6 o'clock in the morning. He'd get up 4:30, find me asleep at the kitchen table. This is true. I'd be up hours writing up the shiur. Wednesday was better, because Wednesday shiur, we had already till next Tuesday to write up. But Tuesday, you wanted to have it written up while it was still clear in your head. And by the way, these notes, which have been preserved, played a role in Sanhedrin. It turned out that on one of the prakim, the only notes they had in reconstructing the shiur were my notes. I have no idea why. Reb Heschel's notes disappeared. And other notes, or maybe Heshi was in the class, I don't know. But the OU thanks me. You can see in the introduction that on this perek, I think it's perek Shlishi, the only notes that survived were my notes. But you always, there was pressure. It was serious. You have to change the world. You have to accomplish. That feeling of seriousness existed in Chachmei Lublin. Polish Jewry was falling apart. See, Litvisha Jewry may have fallen apart earlier. So by the 1930s, they already knew we have a struggle, we're not going to win entirely. Polish Jewry sustained itself longer. Could be the Hasidic world had an impact. World War I wiped it out. Secular Zionism, communism ultimately, socialism, Bundesism, and the Jews were all over the place. Any new ideology, they were there. And Reb Meir Shapiro, we have to accomplish, we have to change, we have to be the leaders, we're the chosen few. And that feeling existed. It was a seriousness that you didn't find elsewhere. Now, in addition to the seriousness, there was something else about Chachmei Lublin. And that was the joy, the happiness, the simcha. And here it was an overtone of the Hasidic world. I remember when I came to Lakewood, I came from Bnei Akiva. Bnei Akiva and Shabbos, oh, what used to go on, Moshava, the singing, the dancing, the Zmirat in Lakewood, it basically didn't exist. Minimal of Zmirat, no great singing, certainly no dancing. It's a Litvisha place. I remember I was complaining, so one of the elder Rabbachim wanted to beat me up. He said, "Min Lerin da Gansavach. What do you want us to do on Shabbos? We're tired from the whole week. And we sleep a little later. What, without learning, what kind of Shabbos is it?" And you see, this is the Rav. You take the Rav. The Rav said publicly, "My grandchildren make fun of me. I don't sing Zmirat." Follow? Who were his grandchildren? The Tversky children. The Talmud Rebbe's grandchildren, as well as the Rav's grandchildren. His Shabbos, the Rav? Hey, min leret nish Shabbos, it's nishna Shabbos. It's not a Shabbos. You can understand here the conflict. Friday night, the Rav gave shiur in his house. That's the famous shiur. And the Rav would talk later, post later. He would teach his son, his two daughters, son-in-law, Aaron Lichtenstein, who was then a student in Harvard. And tell me, Elliot, do you know who the Rav said was his top student from that crowd? Tova Lichtenstein. Tova was my top student. Tova, then she came to the shiur in YR. I told you, she used to sit, I can show you. The room doesn't exist anymore. They broke it in half. Yomo, Vilmo, again, I'm off.
Now I'm recording in progress.
1 second. Do you hear me?
They're not.
No, they don't hear.
No, it's good.
Do you know what to do?
Yeah, it's good.
It's good now? You can hear? Charlie, you better come here, because when you're not here, you see what happens. And 1 second, Morty is gone, right? He's where we're talking about. Kalnaus, Slabodka, wow, Vilna, exactly what we're talking about. So you see, in Yachal, there was seriousness, but there was also joy. Now, a very interesting comment that's accredited to the Gera Rebbe, to the Reim, Reb Avraham Mordechai. So Reb Avraham Mordechai, this is the Sfat Emes's son. During his time, Gera Chassidus was the majority of the Chassidim in Poland were Gera Chassidim, plain and simple. The Chutkova may have been next in numbers. In the Galician area, Belz was very big. And the Gera Rebbe said to Rav Meir Shapiro, he says, generally speaking, yeshivot are to change bachurim into ga'inim. But that doesn't apply to your yeshiva. It is an institute for those who are already ga'inim. And you see, there's a lot of truth to this. 200 blot by heart, a whole serious attitude, but there was joy. Now, Friday night was very unique. Shabbos was very unique. First of all, you had to get ready early. And then this too, I have to admit, I heard this from the Rav it so many times. Just overwhelming, it brings tears to my eyes. Rebbe used to say that what's been felt on America, what's lacking in America, is we don't have Erev Shabbos Jews. You heard this part? So we would say, Rebbe, what do you mean we don't have Erev Shabbos Jews? Halavai, so up hitting Shabbos, let them observe Shabbos. So the Rav told us, I think I write about this, and I think I quote the Rav in volume one of my work. So the Rav said, look, he had a Rebbe, a Chabadnik, you know, again, I can't get involved now to tell you, it's unbelievable what's happened in life, that Shluchim was sent to Russia, and they wandering around the main synagogue in Moscow, and they're telling people, you know, they were told what to say, and they're saying they're Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik. And a Jew comes out of the shtibel on the side. You have to know what I'm talking about. It was the big shul, the Choral Synagogue, which today is remodeled, beautiful. On the side, in my time working for the Mossad, there was a shtibel on the side, which is in the hands of Elter Yidden Chabatnikim. And the Chabadnik comes out and says to these kids, Ichab gehet as du b'zayin talmidim f'rav Soloveitchik. They don't even know Yiddish. He's talking to them in Yiddish. And someone translates, and they say, we are talmidim. And he says, shik ay rebbe agrus from zayin rebbe. And he says, send your Rebbe regards from his Rebbe. And they're looking at him, and they say, and they translate, they're saying, the guy's translating to this, From them it is the Gurus, from who do we send regards? Zog the Rebbe, Rebbaruch from Chaslovich. Rebbaruch from Chaslovich. Anyway, they come back to the Rav. I have this all documented in my work. They come back to the Rav. It's Rabbi Kasdan, Dr. Kasdan. And they come back to the Rav, and the Rav finishes shiur, and he's wiped out, exhausted. Look, I know that feeling. I know when I finish shiur. I can't imagine 20, 30, 40 years. I met a lady on Yontif. Rabbi. She is my student 40 years ago in Machon Gold, and she's thanking me 40 years later with her husband, a world-famous rabbi, MD, heart specialist. They're looking at me like I would look at the Rav Lahavdil between me to my Rebbe. And they're thanking me for the shiur. And I said, I can't imagine how hard I taught then. Machon Gold in the morning, Beam Tea in the afternoon, Michalan in the morning, Kailal in the afternoon, etc., etc. And so the Rav's exhausted, and people are bothering him. And finally, Kasdan says to him, Rebbe, I have regards for you. And the Rav is... And he, from who? And they tell him, Rebbaruch of Chaslovich. The Rav jumps up. He went crazy. They figured out how old he has to be, that he survived the Holocaust. I asked Atara when I went to see his Zichrona Levracha, God, the whole world that I know is no longer here. Mark, thank God you're here. We go back a few years. Elliot, we go back a few years. So I asked Atara, what happened that Shabbos when your father came back? You know, and he was with them for Shabbos, his wife was gone already. She said, my father was like in a state, like a zombie. All he could talk about was his Rebbe, Rebbaruch, I got regards, he's alive. And so the Rav would talk about Rebbaruch Friesberg. This is long before this incident ever happened. And he would recall, yeah, I had this Rebbe, says, 12 o'clock Erev Shabbos, you knew it was Shabbos. He already went to mikveh, put on his big day Shabbos, and he was saying Shir HaShirim, singing, chanting Shir HaShirim. Das Habin in Nisht in America. In America, we don't have Erev Shabbos Jews. Mark, you fall into your house, you're busy in the prison. 2 minutes before Shabbos, you fall into the house. I know, I remember Maplewood. 2 minutes before Shabbos. That we lack. In Chachmei Lublin, you had to get ready hours before Shabbos because right before Shabbos, Reb Meir Shapiro gave a shiur. The whole yeshiva. Now, what did they do? Remember, this is the uniqueness. You had hundreds of students, various Hasidic origins, various cultures. Each one was encouraged, dress like you dress. This one wore a spadeg face, this one wore a Polish hat that I can't even describe it, like an overgrown cap that the gerer wear. Everyone, this one, this type of gartel, this type of gartel. This miniature spadik, some Hasidim, some wear a shtreimel already from the age of 13, from the bar mitzvah on. Well, excuse me? Only in Yerushalayim, that I've seen? Rabbi Sheinaklach, well, you had that in as we said last week. He took in Rabbi Sheinaklach without a bechina. He wanted them at least so in Kenan Epis. Okay, I would have to take a bechina, but Rabbi Sheinaklach was exempt. But all right, I took bechinas in my life. I still remember, I told you about Kutler's eyes when I oitzkechap the mashah. That was just beautiful. Left a very deep impression on me, because it showed me continuity, what Torah is about. And I always used to give sermons when I was in the rabbinate. that the difference between the Orthodox rabbi and the conservative rabbi is the continuity from Rebbe to Talmud, the Masorah. But okay, so they had, everyone was encouraged, whatever the minig was, far kiddush, whatever they would say, no one was allowed to become like anyone else. They kept, that was Rabbi Meir Shapiro's genius idea. And then they sat down to a meal like kings. Friday night, Shabbos, waiters would be serving the meal. In other words, there was a feeling, Bishvili nivra holam, it's gadlatad them. This is enhancing. You're not a batlan, not the way they, I can still remember my grandfather repeating some of the terms he heard in Europe. They looked at a yeshiva, a batlan. And my grandfather had derech eretz yet, but this is my Zayda who was Shomer Shabbos all his years in America. See, that this was dignity, yachal. It was different. Inevitably, gadlat hadam swept the feelings of the yeshiva on Shabbat. Now, Purim was very unique, and here we come to the whole concept of, it began in the Lashon, on Purim they would appoint a Purim Rav. And in order to be a Purim Rav, you had to be one of the top Talmidim. They would say over Sheyurim and be Machadesh and put in some Torah that you read in the memoir literature that students went home from the Lashon and they came from Litvisha homes. They would repeat the Purim Torah on Pesach, that the Torah was so good, so different, and so laughable at times that they would repeat it on Pesach. What here is a very sad story, that the early years of Chachamei Lublin, Rav Meir Shapiro, the first 4 years he's alive, Purim, they once did this to me here, so I know exactly what they did. They took from his she'urim his sharp comments, his comments on the world, halacha l'maiser at times, where we're different, the litvish, chassidim, aguda, mizrahi, and they put it together on Purim. I had that here, I can still remember the student who did it, Rabbi Daniel Yalkut. He put together a tape of all the times I would go crazy and give hashkafa and find fault with the world and then the reform and the conservative and the chveis, the naturakata, and he made a whole tape, an hour and a half tape of Purim Torah and classic. That's what, so you should know that one Purim, it was so good that they wrote it up in an entire sefer. Maginisa de Rebbe Meir, the jewels, the hidden jewels of Rebbe Meir Shapiro. That book was in manuscript. It was lost during the Holocaust. There is some survival to it, and Reb Baruch Shimon Schneerson, remember we mentioned him last week, he was the son-in-law of the Chabina Rav. He was one of the earliest Talmidim of Reb Meir Shapiro. He was Chabina Rosh Yeshiva here in Israel. When I came in Aliyah, he was a focal Torah figure. He later put together a volume with the same title, Maganiza the Rebbe Meir, which consisted of gems that he collected from the She'orim that he heard from Reb Meir Shapiro. Every holiday had its unique features. And here we come, I have to tell you, if I start talking with all the sources, we'll be here till 1 o'clock today. But to put it mildly, Mark, do you think you're a good Jew? Open up the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the Sharim Mitzvahim B'Halacha of Shlomo Braun, and tell me, you baked matzah, hand matzah? You harvested the wheat, and it should be Shmura Mishat Ketzira. You took the Mayim Shalanu, the water, from the well that you're going to use and mixing with the flour. We are missing so much. This is the Divrei Chaim, of Chaim, sons of Chaim, Halberstam. Why? Atam kamus imadei David. He refuses to give the reason why he opposes machine matzah. But so much has been written. It means the harabanya, the sweat. What did you do? What did I do? And I'm just reading the book on Rav David Meshulam Soloveitchik and what he did. And Vic, I have to tell you, please don't give me hand matzah. Let me stick to the machine matzah 100% better, kashrut-wise. I couldn't believe it. He has to look at every hand matzah, and many of them he had to throw chametz gamur. The machine matzah. Now you can understand why the Rav was makpedoni to use machine matzah. Rabban Soloveitchik was makpedoni to use machine matzah. But it's true. The harabanya habminished. Although I will say, Charlie, let me tell it to you this way. For us to drive to Rami Levi to get the matzah and put up with the traffic, I want to tell you, when you go to buy matzah for Pesach, before you get into the car, say, Hineni Muchonu Muzuman, and all the sweat and Akmas Nefesh and the people cutting in front of me in the traffic jams, the cars that are illegally parked, and the people that are demonstrating and blocking the highway. Boy, we have more harabanya than the Divrei Chaim could ever dream of. But Pesach in the yeshiva, they went with Reb Meir Shapiro to harvest, to bake, the singing, the hallel, the dancing. See, it was a Hasidic feeling. And you can imagine what Shavuos was like in Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. I don't think there's one Talmud who left Chachmei Lublin who didn't remain a Yorei V'Sholem all his life. It could be there's one out of a, has to be one exception to the rule. It's not like the Litvische Talmidim, and you have from Slabodka, from near not so many, you have from Rod, you know Rabbi Sriskin's famous story where he tells the story of they catch a kid smoking in Rodin on Shabbos, and they take him to the Chofetz Chaim, and the Chofetz Chaim looks at him and he starts crying, Chilul Shabbos V'Kenmin. And this kid became a Baal Teshuva. And someone stands up in the audience from Florida and says, Rabbi Riskin, I'm the kid who smoked on Shabbos that the Chofetz Chaim rebuked. And I have the story, B'didi HaViyuvda. I told, I had, you know, in the 60s, that children have survived. In the 70s, most of my students in my early years of teaching were children of survivors. And so one father, Amira Talmud Chacham, he used to sit in my class. He wanted to see. He sent his kid to MTA because his wife pushed towards YU, but he wasn't that happy. But he Baruch Hashem, he loved me. Was mutual love between us. He was a rabbi in the Bronx, married an American lady who dafka wanted a Yerushalayim Talmud Chacham. And I was giving Musa. It was Thursday. I used to give Musa in the end. So I was telling the class about Rabbi Baruch Baer, In his yeshiva, one Friday night, they see a door is closed. They open the door, and there's one of the top students writing up a Baruch Beshir that he just heard 10 minutes before. He came over to me after class. He was in tears. He said, "Wie kennst du? An Amerikaner? You're an American. How do you know that?" He says, "I was there in the yeshiva. I couldn't believe I knew it." I said, "Look, I learned in Lakewood, and I heard the story in Lakewood. But you see, in a Litvish yeshiva, that joy, that emotion, you could be an intellect. Where's the emotion? Where's the joy? Didn't the Rav cry many times, 'I've succeeded in giving my students knowledge, but not the emotion. I don't know how to pass it on.' Rebbe, you made a mistake. You gave us emotion." He did, but you don't realize it. The emotion comes from the whole experience of Kabbalat HaTorah. I don't say anything else. One more thing today, touching upon topics that are endless, endless. This is why, who we are, what we are. I want to end off with something beautiful that you can think about. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. You know, everyone wants to be with his parents. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam she'akol nihyeh b'dvaro. Very hard to be away from your parents. So even in Europe, some of the young men would go home. Particularly Hasidic kids want to be with their Rebbeim, with Hasidic court. For the high holidays of 1933, which would be Reb Meir Shapiro's final Tishrei Alei Adamot, he asked the students, "Please, stay in the yeshiva. Let's not run in all directions." All right. However, I'm quoting from the doctorate, the Gera students comprising almost half the student body were hesitant. They wanted to spend the high holidays. Was kann sein? Wird gehört das Asach? A Gere Chassid ist nicht mit der Rebbe von Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? Whoever heard of something like this? A Gere Chassid shouldn't be with the Rebbe Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? And many of the Gere students began the journey to Gere despite the wishes of Rabbi Shapiro. Their loyalty to their Rebbe came ahead of their loyalty to their Rosh Yeshiva. They traveled in open trucks, some 40 to 45 students in each. On the way, it began pouring with rain. A truck broke down, and the driver disappeared. Some students decided these were mifsim, miracles, signs from God, and returned to Lublin. Others were determined to get to Gare no matter what. Think about it. Who was right? What a conflict. A Litvisher yeshiva man basically never got caught up in a conflict like this. But here, a Yachal student, the Rebbe is saying, "Stay, let's not spread to the four corners of Poland." And nevertheless, to pull the Rebbe. Care. Mein Heuf, mein Stibbel, mein Heus, mein Stub, the center, my life. How can you have a Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and not be in the court of the Rebbe? The rain, the truck that breaks down, who was right? Think about it. There's no black and white answer. You're caught between two basic loyalties. We have more to do. Be'ezrat Hashem, next Sunday I pick up where I left off, and it's a very important shiur, because Vic said something. Is he right or wrong? How can you eat all three pieces of meat? Two are kosher, one is not. Vic, you may be right, or you may be very wrong. We will see next Sunday. Ezrat HaNotein LaYav Koach. What did we do today? All right, we've gone further with Reb Meir Shapiro and the whole atmosphere, the whole achievement, the type of students. Reb Purchase Hirschsprung and the two students meeting and promising only l'shem shamayim, not to show off our knowledge, and interesting, a yeshiva for gaonim, not for students who may ultimately become gaonim, and. This was the description of Shabbos, the seriousness, the joy, the Erev Shabbos, the attempt to create an image, a Chassidisha Ben Torah, not a Batlan. Mevinim, two rabbis, 498 Balabatim Mevinim. And by the way, I tied it in with Parkey Synagogue. Think about it. I'm not off course. You've got to see the New York Times and the interviews. And you see, some of the breakaways are successful multi-billionaire business people. Some are medical doctors. Some are professors. We want a Rabbi Alamdin, Sheyurim, guidance. We don't want simple drashot. Fascinating where we're at today. All right. Yes, David.
Do we know of any survivors of the Yahal that survived the Holocaust and went on to become great?
Sure, we're going to talk. We've been talking about that all along. We'll talk more. But that's my article in Chakira, it sent us around Rav Prichvis Hirschsprung. But we'll be reading, where do you come from in the States?
West Hartford, Connecticut.
West Hartford, ain't that, my students have always been rabbis there, West Hartford. You give me the names of the last few rabbis, I'll show you my students. Anyway, but that, do you know Queens?
Not so much.
You've heard of Hillcrest, Young Israel? Who was the first rabbi there? Rabbi Kowalski. He writes a memoir, you'll see. He was Chachmei Lublin. But you talk about Rabbi Lam's family, his uncles, his uncle. He was the founder of Crown Heights Yeshiva. You go on and on, Rabbi Hirsch, Mexico City, Rabbi Hirschman, or I hope I'm pronouncing it right, not Rabbi Hirschman, he was Chachmei Lublin. Detroit, the founder of the day school there, Chachmei Lublin. Rabbi Wisner, B'nai Brak, Chachmei Lublin. His yeshiva is Chachmei Lublin. Not many people realize it. It didn't capture, maybe it can't capture in B'nai Brak today, but it is a Hasidic yeshiva, well-known Talmud of Reb Meir Shapiro. So now you can go on and on. Oh, you missed the first part. That's why I spoke about it earlier, answering Nachum Shmayo's question. Okay, Are there any questions from the gentleman in front of me? You're more open to the world. Let's see if anyone has a... Nachum Lem, I spoke with your parents right before Shavuos. They sounded great. So Baruch Hashem, at least some of my acquaintances are alive and kicking with me.
Recording stopped.
Yeah. Are they unmuted?
Yes.
Are there any questions from around the world?
You mentioned Malon Devar. That's the one in Tel Aviv, right?
That's what I'm talking about, Rehov Gordon in Tel Aviv.
Right, we stayed there in the 70s once.
Yeah, well, the hotel was still around into the 2000s, that much I can tell you. And I was there in the 2000s, and there was the library there. I think there was the Kollel as well. And it's sponsored by the city of Tel Aviv. It's a continuation of the Rambam, Sifriyat Rambam, which picked up what was sent from Hildesheimer Cemetery to Tel Aviv in the hopes that Hildesheimer hoped to open in Tel Aviv. The reason they chose Tel Aviv to open was they felt it's not like Yerushalayim where you're coming into a Haredi community and they'll put you in Chevron right away. That's why Yeshivat Slabatka chose Chevron. As you know from my lectures, Rabbi Cheskel Sana chose Chevron to keep away from Yerushalayim because they would never understand the yeshiva bacha dressed in a modern short suit with a tie, without a beard, etc. And they chose Tel Aviv. But even Tel Aviv, Rab Chaim Oiza Asid. And once he Asid, and the Chazon Ish, of course, had to listen to his Rebbe, and Rebbe Chiel Yaakov Weinberg said it was impossible, you couldn't do anything. And unfortunately, Rebbe Chiel Yaakov Weinberg wound up in Switzerland, which saved his life after the Holocaust. The family, the Weingott family that took care of him, but unfortunately, he never really found his place in Switzerland. In Israel, had he come, it would have been something. But as Rabbi Phil Yaakov said, how could I come to Israel if I go to Hebrew University? Chevron Yeshiva would disown me. If I go to Chevron, my academic colleagues would disown me. Hildesheimer would have been perfect for him. But all right, lo zachinu. We have to live with history, and Baruch Hashem, today there are many yeshivot in Israel, endless yeshivot, thank God, and you have some that are more open-minded, particularly in the Mizrahi world, and if someone like the Chiel Yaakov Weinberg would be here today, he would be carried on the hands of the yeshivot hezder, etc., the rebbeim of the yeshivot hezder. Rabbi Neria, who's got a fund to encourage graduates of Chesder after they do Ami to come back and learn and become Gedolei Yisrael in learning. So Rabbi Chiel Yaakov would be greatly appreciated today. But life has to move on, and I hope his learning, his message, his writings are studied and appreciated. Okay, are there... Yeah?
I think one of the reasons that YU was oriented toward a formal pro-Torah was by necessity, because at the time, unlike Europe, there were not many Rabbanim around, especially those who could speak English and could relate to American kids. And they saw that there was a major need to produce Rabbanim, as many as they could, who could go out and to the masses.
Yeah, no, today, as a result of American, the reasons you give and the utilitarian aspects of Western civilization, almost all the yeshiva are giving smicha. Tera Vadas, Chaim Berlin, you know, a young man has to have panasa, and there has to be a point where he knows he can achieve the title which he will need later in life. What the yeshiva in America have succeeded in doing, and you got to give all of them credit, from YU through Tera Vadas, etc., is we've produced graduates who go on learning all their life. In other words, It's not like a medical doctor who gets his degree and many times doesn't open a medical text again, sort of keeps in touch with some developments, but it's very all on the peripheral. I know when Rav Avadya Yosef came back from his first visit to America, he said to me, "Eifol shehalachti, hayu lomdei Torah al Rama, im achronim vahavana, vikulam talmidim shel yeshiva universita, beinehim rofim, orcheidin, madanim." He was so impressed. Wow, because you didn't see that in Israel at that time. Today, Baruch Hashem, and a part of it is the Daf Yomi. You have to give credit what the Daf Yomi introduced, that people, I have grandchildren learning Daf Yomi. I mean, it's, and they're all professionals, but they're learning Daf Yomi. Kol HaKavod, Kol HaKavod. All right, I don't say the Gedolei Yisrael, and I don't say they're learning with Harifut and total analysis, but they know they have to learn, and that is an achievement. It's not just the Yid Vastavin Shachris Mincha Mariv and goes to an Ein Yaakov Shia. This is something beautiful. And you got to give credit. Again, I saw someone just wrote an article. I think I saw it on Yeshiva World News. And they go back to the original person. I spit the name I mentioned in class who came up with the idea of Daf Yomi. And they don't mention Rav Meir Shapiro at all. And that's totally incorrect because you can have many ideas and he put it on the map. If not for Rav Meir Shapiro, it would not have caught on. So you got to give credit to Rav Meir Shapiro, even though the idea was proposed before him. But with his genius and his ability and his position in life and a good at Yisrael, and the Gever Rebbe's support, look where Daf Yomi is today. Baruch Hashem. Women are learning Daf Yomi. Women make a sea. I saw advertisements already in the Yalonim to join the group, and it's my Talmud's wife, and she's the head of it, and she gives shiur, and another lady gives shiur. All right, as I said, I just reading in Nushin magazine, my wife says, "What do you get out of the magazine?" My wife glances at it. I said, "You don't realize how much I get to know what's going on." But this lady has written the Sefer on the Minchat Chinuch. If anyone has the Sefer, I'd love to see it. And she's already with the learning and the women. But I see already she's talking in terms of women rabbis and Rabbi Merrill, the one I mentioned, Mervis, and women for Sheva Brachis should count as Panim Chadashat. All right, I get a little bit nervous because I am very conservative with a small c. V'hamevin yavin, because I saw what happened to JTS, Shem Yerachim. All right, so I see the image of Rabbi Aaron Cutler in front of me and my Rebbe in front of me and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein in front of me. And Rav Henkin in front of me, I spoke in learning with all these individuals, and I start shaking when I hear about innovation. All right, but we'll leave that for another time until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya.